So this is session 19. We're continuing. Now we're on side two and recording October 9th, 2006. Okay, I'm going to go on to the next quote. I'm going to read it and then go back and restate what we, the quote we just finished on side one. And this quote is from Take Today. And the way I organize this, I clump quotes under sort of a theme for a few pages or so. So we were dealing with media ecology, then the user is the content. And at the end of the last quote, we talked about replay. The next quote is from Take Today Again, page 11. And McLuhan says, as the detective reconstructs events, so the artist, by retracing the processes of cognition, in brackets, mimesis, bridges the world of sense and the world of awareness. James Joyce presents this cognitive bridge in monumental and dramatic form in Finnegan's Wake, colon. He's then going to explain the title Finnegan's Wake. The entire tribal cycle of society now begins again, but awake. Then he has in capital letters, environmental awareness creates a bridge between the old accidental and the newly programmed events of human existence for enrichment through diversity. So you see, he's talking about programming the environment there. Then you go to the next intake today, page 6, a few pages before the quote I just read. He says, in this book, there is no intent to endorse or condemn what has happened. Our concern is to explore and to reveal the process patterns of current happenings, since it is no longer safe to wait for the harsh judgments, to wait for the harsh judgment of results. We must discover how to, in italics, anticipate effects with their causes in order to avoid the inevitable, and the inevitable is in quotes, by programming fate, and programming fate is in quotes. The next quote from Take Today is at the end of the book, page 297. So we read two quotes from the beginning of the book. Now at the end of the book he says, the familiar idea of, quote, making the news now yields to making the world itself. For the best part of a century we have been programming human consciousness with retrievals and replays of the tribal unconscious. The complementary of this process would seem to be the natural, and natural's in quotes, the natural program for the period ahead, colon, and then in italics, this program for the period ahead is programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness. So we're going to have to go into what are the recently achieved forms of consciousness. Then he says, this procedure would evoke a new form of consciousness radically different from former consciousness. Everybody becomes a voluntary participant in creating diversity without loss of identity. Then, the next quote, again from Take Today, and this is back to page 11 again. We already did one quote from page 11. That one's the one that ended, environmental awareness creates a bridge between the old accidental and the newly programmed events of human existence for enrichment through diversity. He then says, hypnotized by their rear-view mirrors, philosophers and scientists alike tried to focus the figure, and the figure is in italics, tried to focus the figure of man in the old ground, ground's italicized, in the old ground of 19th century industrial mechanism and congestion. They failed to bridge from the old figure to the new, and figure is italicized again. It is man who has become both figure and ground, that's like form and content, but he has figure and ground italicized. It is man who has become both figure and ground via the electrotechnical extension of his awareness. And then he ends this paragraph in italics where it says, with the extension of his nervous system as a total information environment, man bridges art and nature. So he's talking about an ecology here and around the concept of the bridge. So is there anything that comes to mind before I go back and read the quote we did at the end of side one? Is this a big mouthful?
Yeah, there's a lot here, so why don't you go ahead back and do that?
Right, so we get into the idea of the user as the content in a quote from page 145, sort of like the middle of the book, middle of Take Today. And Scott read it before, but just in light of what I just said, look at what he said in the middle of Take Today. Keeping in mind that the user is necessarily the content of any man-made service environment or media, it is noteworthy that, with Sputnik, men put the planet inside its first man-made container. From that time, people had an immediate sense of being the, quote, content kings of the earth. As the content of the planet, they suddenly noticed how poor a job nature had done in keeping men in line. And so the Telegraph Press had a phrase, what the public wants. So he says, if, quote, what the public wants was the first child of the Telegraph Press, ecology, in italic, in capital letters, ecology was the first progeny of Sputnik. So the whole ecological, what's it called, Eco Day? What do they call that thing annual every day? Ecology Day or something?
I forget.
But, yeah. That is an effect. That's a concept. That's an effect of the environment of Sputnik. But nobody's looking at media interaction as an ecology. They're looking at the older media, including nature, as what needs to be ecologized. So he's saying ecology was the first progeny or effect of Sputnik. When processes moved up to electric speeds, it became obvious that everything causes everything, which is sort of an ecological view. Everything causes everything is in quotes, and the word causes is italicized. For every cause, there are many effects, just as every effect has many causes. This becomes apparent to those existing in an electric environment of information. So he's saying the idea that everything causes everything is another conceptual effect of the electric environment. It's not the effect of single causes and single effects, which is product of the 18th and 19th century, or the literate, slower, simpler environment. Those existing as the content of a man-made environment never cease adjusting it to their own behavior, just as they adjust their behavior to the environment. Programming, in quotes, programming the environment had this form of slow adjustment earlier. He's saying programming is usually cultural response to new media environments. And so a culture programs the environment by adjusting themselves to it.
Yeah, what we said last week, the consequences of the images or the...
Effects of the consequences.
Yeah. So it's a feedback thing. It's
feedback
one...
That's important. Feedback loop is what's going on, but McLuhan is asking when he says we might need to anticipate effects with their causes, we need feed forward. We need to use a new kind of comprehensive ESP.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into what that is. So, however, for the residents of the wired planet in quote, because he knew the wired planet sounds like connections, but the electronic magnetic city is wireless in terms of resonating interfaces. So that's why he puts wired planet in quotes, because it's not really a wired planet. That's a 19th century idea of things linking up and being connected. Almost mechanical image. However, for the residents of the wired planet or the magnetic city, the programming now begins to assume the character of rapid and extensive change, which we take for granted on radio, movies, and TV. So the rapid change in our entertainment media became an image that we required in our biological life. We were massaged into demanding rapid change. Sputnik and the moonshots brought about, in effect, the institution of a new kind of global theater in which all men become actors and there are few spectators, or, as he says elsewhere, all crew and no passengers. And that's the other idea of the audience getting into the act. The super enterprise, the super audience, like the super enterprise, worked for itself. Remember that quote way back?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just saw it. Page 15. The super enterprise, like the super audience, worked for itself. And that's from page 205 in Take Today, and I'm reading this quote from Take Today. Okay, all men become actors and there are few spectators. The population of the world is both the cast and content of this new theater. The cast would be the actors and the content would be the viewers, but we're both. Think of later the quote where we become figure and ground. So his polarities he lays out in the earlier books, Understanding Media and Gutenberg Galaxy, have now merged. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The repertory of the theater consists of a perpetual happening, improvised and programmed together. Perpetual happening, happenings in italics. This happening can include the retrieval or replay of any previous happenings that men choose to experience. And replay is in italics. The replaying of past events in realistic, and realistic is in quotes, the replaying of past events in realistic ways began with the power of print to retrieve the ancient authors and historians. It's like the beginning of virtual reality, if we think of virtual reality as something that's realistic, right? Looks
mm-hmm.
like what we biologically experience. And so print was the first step of realistically replaying in an early fragmented form of realism, but is on its way. The Elizabethan stage projected scenes and characters of the past as a staple entertainment. Shakespeare's plays about the medieval dramas, medieval life circumstances. Our power to reconstruct the past has grown steadily with media enlargement, not media shrinking. So he's talking about media enlargement. That's leading up to the Sputnik. After the Sputnik, it gets tinier. So our power to reconstruct the past over the last 500 years has grown steadily with media enlargement. I put in the 500. Till Hollywood made such replays into a major feature of this century. Okay, we said that, and then we have this quote. Let's have you read the next quote from page 11 of Take Today, which I already read. And see, and you can stop if you have any statement to make.
Hypnotized?
No, as the detective reconstructs events. Page 41. A quote I already read.
Yeah, okay, here we are. As the detective reconstructs events, so the artist, by retracing the process of cognition, or mimesis, bridges the world of sense and the world of awareness. James Joyce presents this cognitive bridge in monumental and dramatic form in Finnegan's Wake. The entire tribal cycle of society now begins again, but awake. And this is all capitalized. Environmental awareness creates a bridge between the old accidental and the newly programmed events of human existence for enrichment through diversity.
Period from
Take Today.
Yeah, now what's interesting is we were talking before we started taping about the question of awareness. So you got a lot of talk here about awareness. You got the gap between the world of sense and the world of awareness, and that could be like world of sense is body and the world of awareness is mind. Environmental awareness creates bridge. So he's talking about this phenomenon of awareness. And he said, as the detective reconstructs events, so the artist, by retracing the process of cognition, and that's usually individual cognition, private sensory life. But McLuhan, like the detective, but the being a up-to-date artist, he replays the history of humanity's development of collective cognition. So the artist, so McLuhan, by retracing the evolutionary process of collective cognition through the idea of media, bridges the world of sense and the world of awareness.
Well, that's interesting. I just thought of something, because last week we were talking about how the drama of cognition is a replay of the what the primitives were doing when they did ritual.
Right.
So when they performed ritual, it involved, you know, they were sort of acting it out. They would be dancing and wearing costumes and feathers and all of this. And then when we get to the replay of that in For Literate Man, it goes from external behavior to internal thought, where you can't even see that anybody's doing anything because they're just sitting there passively thinking or reading a book or
watching TV.
But
then they create an artifact, a private artifact, a painting, a novel, a poem, a musical piece. That's the product of their thought, but it's made by one individual for others to experience collectively.
The act of the attempt to cognize the universe by the tribal man is through the act of doing the dance and the ritual
and the retracing of their sense of the evolution of the sun coming up.
Yeah, and for the literate man, he's doing that while passively, you know, reading a book or thinking.
Yes, he's bridging the world of sense and the world of awareness. And reading a book is, he's reading the content of a people's experience in the literate medium. So bridging the world of sense and the world of awareness is, the world of awareness is how the human cognitive process flips the world and reverses it in the eye. And so collectively, the natives, the primitive societies, they thought they had to express their awareness by remaking the world. So the world of sense and the world of awareness. So then James Joyce presents this cognitive bridge in monumental and dramatic form. That means in big, big evolutionary terms, which is what McLuhan is reconstructing, the entire tribal cycle of society now begins again, but awake. And we're awake, so we're not totally tribal in the 20th century. We're something else. He called it mass man. Well, we have that extra individual legacy, so we're both mass and individual. And virtual, the virtual Android meme really is congenial to that apparent schizophrenia between being collective and individual, tribal and individual. It really keeps you involved in the tribal part, which I call the cloning of ESP, and then the individual private matrix pod is what I call voluntary ESP.
When you refer to the Android meme, you know, it just occurred to me, are there Android memes, or is there an Android meme? If there's an Android meme, that implies a centralized sphere of control.
Yes, that's the seamless web. The Android meme, as I have in my chart, is, its content are previous happenings, which are now just memes and reference points to back when there were media landscapes. So
yeah.
They all are in one little untranslatable node.
But that's many, many memes all dancing around and bumping into each other.
But if they cancel out.
If there's an Android meme, that implies there's a centralized, there's centralization.
Yes, it's called New World Order. It's called globalization. It's called economies run by interest rates. Or in McLuhan's phrase, the word makes the market.
Mm-hmm.
The White House is not literally, not the United States White House, but the White House. The President of the United States is the Android meme, the central point of it. Because that's the human being, living large.
Yeah, but still bouncing around and subject to being the subject of other memes. I mean, right
yes.
now.
That's his many audiences, which are also his. He's the audience, he's the emperor, watching all the global theater cast. It flips back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
We only have time to recognize that Android meme every 4 years, because the user is the content. So we're thinking of an image that's both seared, sealed together and centralized, but at the same time hyper-fragmented.
Mm.
It's like string theory. It's interesting. String theory uses the symbol M, and M is used in economic management of money society. The amount of money in society is called M1 or M2 or M3. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the strings. Most people think of money as the way to pull strings. So string theory is the literalization back into mathematics and formulas of the fact that everybody is being pulled and pulling the strings of the Android meme. So string theory is translating that back into physics, and it doesn't connect with the tradition of physics, because they say there's no experimental evidence for it. Yet it is accepted as a new valid challenge to the older physics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's virtual. There's no substance to it. It's like a quark.
Well, does it relate to that metaphor of organism, the cell, has to be aware of all of its parts?
Yeah, that quote way back on page 27 of the McLuhan thread. Biogeneticists say today that a growing organism, at every point in its growth, has to know what the whole organism is doing in order to develop. The consequences of the images are the images of the consequences. This involvement in polarity, knowing and growing, is both creative and destructive. So that's like awareness and sense, knowing and growing. You could substitute the word awareness in there for knowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That interplay between sense, the world of sense, and the world of awareness.
Right. Between matching and making.
Yes. So we have James Joyce presents this, and then environmental awareness creates a bridge between the old accidental and the newly programmed events of human existence for enrichment through diversity. So more and more fragmentation, more happenings replayed, as the world centralizes. So centralization and decentralization happening at the same time. And the Android meme is going to encourage the lack of awareness of centralization. They're going to encourage diversity. It is going to encourage diversity. The sense of you are living large and no strings are running you. So, was there any questions about that that you want to go into? When he talks about programming, anticipating, we're going to get that in the next quote, where he says, since it is no longer safe to wait for the harsh judgment of results, we must discover how to, quote, no, in italics, anticipate effects with their causes. That's like comprehensive ESP. You're not just predicting this event or that event. You're naming the cause that led to that event to happen. You're anticipating effects with their causes in order to avoid the inevitable by programming fate. That sounds pretty impossible, pretty totalitarian, pretty utopian, whatever. Doesn't sound realistic. But he's actually describing what is already going on. What all the endless surveillance is anticipating effects with their causes. Madison Avenue has a form of media ecological awareness. They're not trying to do it for diversity. They're trying to fit into the 19th century idea of money. Money is controlling the measurement of the results. And whether
they try to analyze the audience to figure out what's going to work in their ads, advertising.
Yeah, they try to figure out where the ground is going and then jump in front and claim to lead the parade.
Mm-hmm.
Or in claim to discover where the parade wants to go.
Yeah.
But they already know where the parade is tending to go.
Yeah.
But the people aren't aware of the present as a parade, the people aren't aware of where the parade is going.
Yeah. No, I noticed along the way when I was growing up that trends among teenagers that gave them a sense of identity, but then those trends would gradually enter into the media, and then 10 years later they'd be part of the media and they'd be cliche. But these trends get absorbed into the media much faster now, and maybe the media is even setting the trends.
Right, and so when he talks about the programming, the events of human existence, that sounds totalitarian, but he's playing off the programming with the idea that it creates enrichment. So one of the major agendas, McLuhan, is trying to break down people's assumptions that this Orwellian future is inevitable and has a character of total obvious control. And he knew the obvious level of control was a 19th century idea of a wired, connected planet, but not true in the resonating interface where the audience is both king and slave. Like all those people in that ad that work for Verizon, they all have kings in their media experience at home, but they're slaves for a massive electro-technical environment called Verizon,
mm-hmm.
and they're all just little quark units for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they oscillate between being a nothing and being a super content king.
Mm-hmm.
And so where is the, that's why, you know, when scientists or people talk about the development of our free will and then we find out we're programmed and we've lost our free will and then the internet brings back a sense of free will, all those concepts are immature if you don't include the technological ground that creates such notions. And then the mix of all of them. So you get this quote, first of all, McLuhan says in this book, Take Today, there's no intent to endorse or condemn what has happened. He's not using value judgments. Our concern is to explore and to reveal the process patterns of current happenings, because he wants to help people develop feed forward. And feed forward is defined by the phrase anticipate effects with their causes. So when scientists or anybody comes up in a public situation with a new concept, they never give the cause of the concept. The ground for it. They just want people to get enthusiastic about the effect or the concept. So then he says in this quote him, page 297, the familiar idea of making the news now yields to making the world itself. So if Bush is a news agency, in the sense that he generates news, that's not really what's going on. He's generating life. He is making the world itself.
Mm-hmm.
He's making reality, which is made up of all this merger of second nature and first nature, or biology and media.
Wow. Do you think this concept fits in from way back when we were starting out with LaRouche, and he was talking about the poet who gets some kind of a snatch of gestalt, which
gets
is
a glimpse.
Yeah, which is not even communicable, but then he figures out, he architects a way to communicate that effect, to put that effect into the world.
Right. Now, LaRouche is talking about the individual mind.
Yeah.
It's like and LaRouche celebrates Edgar Allan Poe like McLuhan does. And so as the detective, and the detective story was created by Edgar Allan Poe, as the detective reconstructs events, so the artist by retracing the process of cognition. LaRouche is talking about the individual psychological process of creativity and how it can't really express what it experienced, but it translates back into older media or older concepts or makes a poem out of it. McLuhan is taking that process and seeing it as collective. And he's saying Joyce is the key to that. Joyce took the artistic process and saw that it was a collective thing.
Mm-hmm.
It originally was collective before Daedalus. Then Daedalus made it individual as you moved into the Greek individualist visual space. And then Joyce saw at the borderline of the New Electric Age that we were retrieving the collective rituals, but they were miming the individual process. So LaRouche is talking about the individual creative genius, and McLuhan is showing how that's an environmental pattern where everybody's involved in making a collective genius.
Mm-hmm.
Where we got to the point, we are bridging the old accidental and the newly programmed. The old accidental events were done because no one knew what was causing them, because the change was too slow. But once we have real change, we may not, as he says, totally control the situation, like your poet having the glimpse, but we will accept programming, which would be an assimilated attempt to have control. And we would, that's our attempt to make the rapid change adjust back to us.
Mm-hmm.
This, and then he says, for the best part of a century, that would be like from 1870 to 1970, when he's writing this book, for the best part of a century, we have been programming human consciousness with retrievals and replays of the tribal unconscious. That was the communist threat, or the socialist threat in the 19th century, and the anarchist threat, and then the communist threat in the 20th century. They were the newly retribalized electric effect. Retrievals and replays of the tribal unconscious is the content of the 20th century. But the present is a different kind of human being, known as mass man, who's not limited to being tribal. But it's almost like the poet making a poem, translating the ineffable glimpse back into known media. We're trying to translate the present environment back into known social organizations called tribal replace by McLuhan. That's fascism, socialism, communism, capitalism. The complementary of this process would seem to be the natural program for the period ahead, programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness. What is the recently achieved form of consciousness? It's the fact that once you have television and the later mixed tactile media, everybody can see the same thing at the same time. It's a form of ESP.
Mm-hmm.
The recently achieved forms of consciousness program the unconscious. So the replay of tribal unconscious modes requires an anti-environment of the electronic speed-up. And McLuhan could be saying, I asked Barry Nevitt, who wrote this sentence with McLuhan, what were the recently achieved forms of consciousness? And he said, Finnegan's Wake. So Finnegan's Wake and all that it implies is the way of becoming non-tribal by using a visual medium. Because a visual medium, the book, enhances individuality and plays down the tribal group effect, which comes from speech and preliterate forms. And he says, this procedure would evoke a new form of consciousness radically different from former consciousness. That's like evoking new bodies. Everybody becomes a voluntary participant in creating diversity without loss of identity. That's like you said earlier. We program events for enrichment through diversity. And then you take anybody who is featured in the media as an expert. This is a description of them by McLuhan. Hypnotized by their rearview mirrors, in other words, older media, they believe in speaking English or writing books or painting or music, all these older individualist media. Hypnotized by their rearview mirrors, philosophers and scientists alike tried to focus the figure of man in the old ground and try to fit it back, like LaRouche's poet trying to fit it back into a knowable form of expression. To focus the figure of man in the old ground of 19th century industrial mechanism and congestion. You don't have congestion on one level in the 20th century when you have cars and you can leave the cities, right? That does create other kinds of pollution, but the 19th century industrial tribalism is countered by the autonomy that newer, faster media give people in the 20th century. These rearview mirror philosophers and scientists failed to bridge from the old figure to the new figure. It is man who has become both figure and ground via the electrotechnical extension of awareness. It's man that becomes the new figure. The old figure is a man fitting inside industrial mechanism and congestion. But the new figure is man propped up as an autonomous mixed corporate media entity who is both figure and ground. And then he has in italics, with the extension of his nervous system as a total information environment, man bridges art and nature. Man bridges art and nature. Art being first nature. No, art being second nature, what humans make, and nature, the word nature referring to what I call first nature. Man is between the interval between first and second nature, and he bridges them. Now that implies that the fusion between first and second nature, which I say cold fusion actually realizes, McLuhan is realizing that the software environment of the 70s and 80s, or 60s and 70s and 80s, is a fusion of first and second nature, but it's a software version, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it would be very hard for you to explain how man bridges art and nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Well, just as a software simulation of fusion was incomprehensible to, you know, the Renaissance man, the individualist man. This cold fusion thing is, I know you keep talking about it, and just like, you know, people said we're never going to fly and then would fly, people are saying we're never going to have the cold fusion. It sure doesn't seem like we're going to have it. It seems incomprehensible from this side of the of the story.
But we're more conscious. People weren't conscious of that process 100 years ago, but you can be conscious of the fact that, hey, people usually don't know that what's coming is totally unexpected. You now know that pattern. So you're caught in the interval between, yeah, it's pretty far-fetched, but we've seen through most of the last 100 years that what was far-fetched actually came true.
Yeah.
You're awake.
Yeah.
And the average person is awake under this speed-up of conditions of experiencing rapid change and how people look stupid as changes uncover. As changes unfold, people realize, well, what that person was saying 10 years ago was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the... On the one side of the fence, you have the cause and effect people who say that, the top-down people say that, well, you know, we get the world, we have the technology that we have, and we have the governments that we have because of the people that created this infrastructure and sort of imposed it on us. And then you have a little more metaphysical thinking people who say, no, we get what the collective dreams up. What we collectively dream is what we get, and it's not being imposed on us from outside.
You're relating the top-down with the bottom-up.
Well, when I think of bottom-up in Bob terms, I'm thinking of... I'm not thinking of collective will, necessarily. I'm thinking of collective environments, collective communication environments.
Finning its wake is the guide to that. If you accept Finning its wake, and it's based on a dream. So that, to me, the collective will fits into your quoting someone saying
right.
Collective dreaming.
I mean, if the... I don't know if we talked about it on this tape, but if the Twin Towers collapsed due to the being witnessed by the collective consciousness, and that's what the collective dreamed happened,
yeah,
then it may be true that that you know, collectively we're not going to get cold fusion until we collectively will it to happen. It's not just like one scientist discovers it and GM squelches it. It's like, no, it's like collectively we're dreaming up this whole thing. And
right, and it can be shown to be in physical terms. The collective dreaming of cold fusion is this software merge phase we're in now that he was just describing, where we bridge art and nature.
Yeah.
Where we're both figuring ground, the very nature of mixed media in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s has been the knowable, technical dreaming of cold fusion. We're already, it's like the effects preceding the causes.
Yeah. But I don't think we'll dream it. I don't think humanity will collectively dream it into existence until it's so inconvenienced by the present environment that it doesn't want to cope with the horror of the present environment. So it'll dream into being the new cold fusion environment. But right now, humanity's not tired enough of what we have.
I would say that the way, when you have back in 83, you know, millions of people protesting a war, and it's the first time that, back in 1990 was the first time every nation in the world condemned Saddam going into Kuwait. Those are new expressions of collective will. And so you got millions of people protesting. They're expressing a ground, a feeling. And like Baudrillard said, everybody in the 90s all over the world hated the World Trade, hated this globalized digital body in a lot of ways because of it just seemed to be too much. And so they willed its collapse, and that was symbolized by 9-1-1, and the world supposedly has changed since 9-1-1. So the working out of this exhaustion or frustration, it's already been going on for 10 years.
Yeah.
Especially the hatred, the global hatred of Bush, that's expressing a hatred of the Android meme,
mm-hmm,
the image. So we've got to that level of frustration that will flip into cold fusion. And on a technical level, it's when the frustration leads to the quagmire of violence in the Middle East, and then that allows oil to be blocked, and then China is, like you say, forced to use an alternative form of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the 60s, and because we're talking about becoming in this dream, but Finnegan's Wake means the dreamers are becoming awake of the process of the dream we've been in.
Yeah.
And that's part
and collectively aware because of the collective global media, which puts us all in the same space. I mean, just think back 1,000 years ago, you had tribes of people in different geographical locations who lived a lifetime never knowing about one another.
They did encounter each other, they're like total strangers, total weird phenomena.
Yeah. And they could only encounter their neighbors. They couldn't encounter tribes on the other side of the world. Now everybody's encountering everybody all at once.
Yes, Finnegan's Wake's theme of Here Comes Everybody. And so that makes us look at the unconscious dreaming of that led to the 19th century and then to the 20th century. We're now aware of that process, and that's partly what he means when he says that as the detective reconstructs events, so the artist, by retracing the process of cognition, bridges the world of sense and the world of awareness. And then he says James Joyce presents this as a collective level. And then McLuhan translates that. Now, here is the next quote, describes why we became awake. It's not just we're all together. There's another factor. And this quote is from PR, which is an essay by McLuhan in 1962, the year Gutenberg Galaxy came out, and 2 years before Understanding Media came out. So he's not even really famous then. He does win the Governor General's Award, the Canadian award, in 62, so he's known by a certain elite in Canada, but he hasn't got the popular status that he gets later, a few years later. So in 1962, in this magazine called Canadian Art, an article called Prospect, volume 19, September, October 1962, let's read what he says. And this is page 366 in that magazine or journal.
These new forms, television and radio, are new languages. They're huge extensions of ourselves which enable us to participate in one another's lives, much as language does. But these forms lay down their own ground rules. The modes of participation are already built into technology. They are real, rigid art rules for each form. There are real, rigid art rules for each form.
There's this, talking about laws of media, you know, 12 years before he starts talking about the laws of media.
The fact that we have many media now enables us to leap across the barriers from one form or one set of rules to another. And I think it is this italicized multiplicity of media that is now enabling man to free himself from media for the first time in history. He has been the victim, the servo mechanism of his technologies, his media from the beginning of time. But now,
he has been the victim, the servo mechanism of his technologies, those technologies being his media from the beginning of time. But now,
because of sheer multiplicity of them, he is beginning to awaken, because he can't live with them all.
There's the explanation. If you have so many media in the global theater in the 60s, nobody can stay stuck in any particular media or culture's bias. It's like you're saying, they're encountering everybody, but it's not just encountering individuals, they're encountering collective cultures all over the world, and the media that brought those cultures into contact.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of rearview mirror in response, but basically the human being is caught between first and second nature, and he can't live with this multiplicity, so he's forced into pattern recognition and seeing that nothing holds anymore, and we enter into the age of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins to awaken from the dream or become he's not aware of what's making him awake, but he is becoming awake in terms of no longer hypnotized by his local culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that really leaves it's like a lot of novelists in the 70s and 80s used the theme of exile. It's like every human being in every culture is an exile inside this multiplicity. There's no place to land.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good quote, and he's saying that very early. The sheer multiplicity of them. And he's saying this just after Telstar in 1962, 5 years after Sputnik. He's describing the global theater and the mixed corporate media interacting.
Yeah, the global theater, and we're seeing, you know, we're becoming awake, and it's acting on us, but we're both participating in it and seeing ourselves participating in it at the same time.
In many things,
are we looking at it from two perspectives? One from being the performer on the stage, and the other being looking at ourselves. That's like looking at yourself from outside of the body.
Yes, and that is what Cuba's painting was, showing a person from different points of view, and which began to happen with the movie environment. So seeing yourself from different angles, it's more than two, is the common experience of the 20th century. That leads to collage forms of art. But cubism is pretty interesting because it shows a human form and it looks fragmented, but it actually is collaging the different angles one could look at the human form.
Yeah. I don't know if this...
Here's something. You take a movie with Greta Garbo and the camera's panning around looking at her different angles. As a human being, if you encountered Greta Garbo in the street, you'd be talking to her. Even if you knew her, you'd just talk to her. You wouldn't walk around and look at the side of her head and then behind her head and another angle. You'd stay still.
Yeah.
But people are looking at human beings with the movie camera because the movie camera's in motion.
Yeah.
So the artist paints that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People aren't aware of that.
Yeah.
And they don't even know what Picasso was painting.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, I don't know how this statement fits in here, but somebody was talking about the cave paintings at Lascaux.
Yeah,
and said that when Picasso saw those for the first time, he went to see them or similar cave paintings from that period. He his mind was blown, and he said, "We haven't discovered anything new in art since these people painted these paintings, made these sketches." In other words, he thought I don't see it, but he thought that the artwork those guys did on the caves 30,000 years ago or whatever it was as sophisticated as anything Picasso was doing in his day.
Yeah, and if you got him down on the coach and quizzed, he might change what we're presenting, what we think he means. He'd say, no, that's not what I meant. We don't know what he meant.
Yeah.
But on the surface, it's a silly statement. But he is pointing out that humans were aware for a long... There's a level of constant user's content awareness going on or something. Not sure. I mean, you don't see what he means. I don't know what he means. But he's expressing a shock of the implosion of time.
Mm-hmm.
Or his sense of time being a mystery in its origins. When he actually sees something from the so-called origins, it altered him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like a new experience. It was a new medium for him. He saw a new medium and he altered it. And he registered by saying, hey, we haven't done anything. We haven't, what do you say? We haven't changed? We haven't progressed?
Yeah, we haven't invented anything new artistically since these guys did these cave paintings.
To me, it sounds like a typical mind making sense, but it always reverses what's going on and makes sentences that are totally sensible to the person uttering them, but to others, it doesn't make any sense because we have to fit it into our context, so we don't know what he meant.
Yeah.
You would think it would be logical to say, man, seeing those things shows how much we've changed.
Yeah.
How much we've improved.
Yeah, because that would have been... I don't think they incorporated perspective into their paintings, because that would only...
They didn't. They weren't meant to be seen.
Yeah, so he...
They weren't even meant to be seen. It was like ESP.
Yeah.
So in that sense, we were... The electric age was ESP,
yeah.
And we were retrieving cavemen.
Yeah.
So one could say that Picasso, unconsciously, was expressing McLuhan, who said, hey, we've retrieved primitive awareness in our electronic suburban caves.
Yeah.